Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And as this episode is coming to all you guys and gals out there, it is, of course, coming to you right as we're leading up into St. Patrick's Day, which I have always loved St. Patrick's Day. I don't have, I'm basically of Scotch-German heritage, so I don't have that, you know, distinctive Irish roots link mm-hmm. to it, and I don't have, you know, I don't have the, like, the Catholic link to it either, but from a very early age, like, my family was always into St. Patrick's Day. You know, my mom is a kindergarten teacher, so we would have green things. We would eat green treats.
Green beer?
Well, no green beer, but maybe like a green cake or a cupcake or something. And I still, St. Patrick's Day comes around, I'm like, I need to eat something that's green. I need to get like a pistachio cupcake or have some pistachio pudding. But more importantly, we would, to a certain extent, we would celebrate the Irish myth of the leprechaun. We would always watch Darby O'Gill and the Little People, that classic Disney film with Sean Connery in it.
Wow, you guys did it up.
Yeah, we were big into the holidays.
Okay.
So we would always watch Darby O'Gill and the Little People. Sean Connery would sing, and it was awesome. Leprechauns would run around. There was a banshee. You know, it was a great film. I still watch it from time to time.
I feel like this has really informed, like, your ideas of creatures in the world. Like, somehow this is, like, an early influence on you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we really got into Halloween, and then we would really get... My big thing on holidays is that if a holiday has magic to it, then it, in creatures specifically, mm-hmm. then it's great. Like, I can, obviously, Halloween I love.
Right.
Christmas, you know, the Christmas season can get a bit annoying with its over-commercialization, but ultimately it's a season in which, on one hand, you have a magical man sneaking into your house to give you gifts. There's Krampus running around beating people.
Yeah.
There's what's his name, Brumschnickel, the other Germanic holiday visitor. There are various takes on Saint Nick, and then if you get into the more religious aspect of it too, you have like the Son of God being born on Earth. There are all these fantastic things happening. Saint Patrick's Day is also in that vein, unlike Valentine's Day, where it's just about people are in love and stuff. But St. Paddy's Day, there's this backbone of myth and legend to it, and it's awesome. So what is your background with Leprechaun?
Well, quickly, Valentine's Day clearly needs some sort of creature because it's lacking that.
We should really get into the idea of brainstorming that with our listeners.
That's a side project for all of us. But for me, St. Pat's has just always been St. Pat's. I got to say, in my family, it was sort of like Santa Claus is really like the dude down the street who's dressing up, and leprechauns don't exist, Julie.
Really?
Man, happy fourth birthday.
Oh.
I'm just kidding. No, but really that's not really something that we celebrated much. But I will say that the diminutive stature of leprechauns I always thought were fascinating as a little kid. And what I find even more fascinating is that there is a type of hallucination that deals with this Lilliputian quality. And that's what we're going to talk about today because, again, in celebration of St. Paddy's Day, but also as a further investigation into how the mind works and how it scales our reality.
Yeah. So in this episode, we're kicking off with a little pop culture leprechaun shenanigans here. I'm going to talk just a little bit about the myth of the leprechaun because I think it's ultimately far deeper than Lucky Charms and Darby O'Gill, and I want to make sure I do that justice.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are going to get into hallucinations and how some of these hallucinations can contribute and or possibly are responsible for our visions of little people.
That's right, because as we had mentioned, this is a sort of subtype of hallucinations that exist across various conditions that we'll get into.
All right, so the leprechaun.
The leprechaun.
From Irish folklore, this is a fairy shoemaker. And he goes by various names, and it really depends on where you are in particular region of Ireland, and or the history books. So you have Lucarpan, and again, this basically translates to little body. And then there are various versions of that. Lubricant, Lucarpan, Leprechaun. There are all these various takes on it. But it's the one that we really go with today, of course, is Leprechaun. And the leprechaun is a shoemaker. You generally would see him with just a single shoe. There would never be a second shoe around, which is a little suspect and should have been a tip-off to people who end up messing with said leprechaun.
Is this like waste management job? Yeah. Like, you know, maybe that's for a leprechaun, being a shoemaker.
Yeah, like you should be a little aware that where's the other shoe? There's something fishy going on.
Mm-hmm.
Also, and this is something that will come up, especially if the leprechaun is pressed about his personal belongings, he carries a purse. But the purse only contains a single shilling, much like a pizza delivery boy only carries $20 or less.
Mm-hmm.
The idea here is, oh, you're going to try and steal me gold. I only have this one shilling. But I may have lots of gold elsewhere. That's the big thing. This idea grows that leprechauns have access to a massive quantity of gold. And certainly in the mythology, they do. They're paid by the fairy folk for what? I'm not sure. I guess repairing that one shoe over and over again. So, and they save up their money.
So they're laundering the money is what you're saying.
Kind of money launderers, the leprechauns. But people get this in their mind. Oh, there's a leprechaun. If I capture the leprechaun, then I can get access to his fabulous gold. I can make him tell me where it is. And later you get into the idea of the leprechaun gives you three wishes, but ultimately the root is if you catch a leprechaun, you can totally rob him of everything he owns. That's how the average leprechaun chasing individual was thinking. So what would typically happen is you'd say the classic story, of course, is the guy catches the leprechaun and says, "Oh, take me to your gold." And you have to know that if you look away from the leprechaun at all, then he can vanish. He can turn invisible. He's a supernatural creature with these powers at his disposal. So what happens is the leprechaun says, "Oh, I'll take you to the bush that I have the gold buried beneath." And who knows if this bush actually has the gold under it or not. The trick works well either way. But it takes him out there and he says, "Oh, it's under this bush." And then the guy who's captured the leprechaun realizes, "Oh, I don't have a shovel. I have no way of digging up this gold." So he says, "I know what I'll do. I'll take this red bandana or this kerchief or whatever, and I'll tie this red kerchief to this bush.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll go home and I'll get my shovel and I'll come back." So he lets the leprechaun free, goes back home, he gets the shovel, comes back, and what has the leprechaun done? The leprechaun has tied the red kerchief to every bush and tree in sight. So there's no way for him to remember which bush. What's he going to do, dig up all of them? He'll try for a little bit before he loses his mind, I guess. But that's the trickster aspect of the leprechaun.
Okay, see, that just takes me back to the 30 Rock maxim. which is never follow a hippie to a second location.
Yes.
Same thing with the leprechaun, right?
Yeah. So the leprechauns engage in various tricks like this. They are largely solitary creatures, though they do have a king named Lubdin.
They're all males, too, correct?
Yeah, I did see some possible mention of female leprechauns, and the idea being that female leprechauns do exist, but they're even more tricky. So they're harder to observe in
mm-hmm.
nature.
They're making that second chew.
Yeah, or maybe they're less into messing around and deceiving humans. Because ultimately, the idea here is that leprechauns are a type of fairy folk. They are fairies. And fairies... the notion of fairy varies greatly around the world, but there exists a nearly global idea of diminutive magical humanoids and that are out there in the world,
mm-hmm.
Often generally hidden from view, kind of an underworld taking place or in the natural world or underground or, you know, somewhere that humans are less likely to see them during the course of their day. And they vary in temperament depending on the myth. Sometimes they're benign. Sometimes they're mischievous. Sometimes they help humans out. Sometimes they steal babies from cribs and replace them with changelings. It varies. Now, folk historian Carol Rose, who I love, I've always loved her. She has two encyclopedias, one about monsters, one more about fairies. And, I always keep them by my desk, next to Brewers and my other monster books, but she divides fairies into two types. You have trooping fairies, and these are fairies that have communities, kingdoms, and governments. And then you have solitary fairies, and these are the ones, kind of like the leprechaun, they're more associated with one place, and they don't really necessarily have as much to do with the rest of their kind. So, for the Irish, the most famous solitary fairies are the leprechaun, of course, arguably the banshee, and then you also have their more famous trooping fairies, the Dina Shí, formerly known as the Tuatha De Danann, and which means the people of the goddess Dana. And these are a legendary race of super beings who overthrew two other ancient people in primordial Ireland that included the monstrous Firbolgs. These were the second inhabitants of Ireland, squat and dark, also known as the Corca Odisi, the people of darkness, or the Corca Duibni, the people of night. When the Tuatha De Danann defeated them, they forced them to retreat into the mountain caves, and they kind of, devolved into grotesque goblin-like creatures in the ground. And then they also defeated the Formorians, who were themselves transformed into grotesque demons when they fell to the invading Firbolgs. So what's really great about Irish legend and myth is that when you get past the leprechaun and the banshee, when you get past Darby O'Gill and Lucky Charms and the awful leprechaun movies, there's this rich, powerful, epic story of these genocidal wars between these different races of super beings. Because the Dina Shí, the Tuatha De Danann, they had all of these intense magical powers at their disposal. They could turn invisible. They could shapeshift. They could blink out of existence here and blink back into existence over there. And they were always fighting these wars. For instance, they were fighting at one point against the Fomorian chief Balor, who had an evil eye in his forehead that destroyed all who looked upon it.
Hmm.
And sometimes you see this as kind of like a third eye in his head. Some depict it that way. Others depict him as like a one-eyed man with like and the one eye has to be covered because if anybody makes eye contact with it, they die. One of my favorite artistic examples of this, though, is the idea that he has like one eye where his two eyes should be,
mm-hmm.
but his brow has grown out into this grotesque flap that falls over his face. And so to unleash the power of his eye in battle, he has to have two people with a wooden pole come up and use that wooden pole to lift his floppy brow up so that he can destroy them with his sight.
So, okay.
Well, one more, and then I'm done. And then also, the Tuatha De Danann, they had a king named Nuada, and Nuada lost an arm in battle. And so they replaced it with a silver arm, which they then grew flesh over. So he had this amazing, like, magical cybernetic arm. So, okay, I'll stop now.
No, I mean, when we get into prosthetics here, it gets pretty crazy.
Yeah. What I'm trying to say is that they have a rich cultural history and some amazing mythology going on there beyond the leprechaun. But
yeah.
All of this relates to fairy folk. Like, eventually the idea is that even these magical people were defeated by essentially the modern-day Celts, And they drive all of these magical people out into the peripheries of the world. But you can still glimpse them. You still see them sometimes.
Well, see, this is what I think is so interesting about it, is that it is so deeply ingrained in the cultural fabric, particularly in when we talk about leprechauns in Ireland, right?
Right.
And how this really informs everybody's perception of life. And I wanted to point out a couple of things. One is that leprechauns are protected under European Union law. I kid you not.
That was crazy to find out about.
Yes, at least the ones that dwell in Collingford in Ireland. The directive is an effort to preserve the rich biodiversity of the area called the Sliabh Foy Loop, which is now a protected area for flora, fauna, wild animals, and leprechauns. And this is a directive that was stemmed in part by a group of lobbyists who recounted a tale in 1989 of P.J. O'Hare, who happened to be over by Wishing Well, this man, and he heard a scream, and he said he went to the Wishing Well, and he found, first of all, a patch of burnt ground, and beside this patch he found a little hat, jacket, and trousers with four gold coins in the pockets. The clothes of the naked leprechaun, as this leprechaun is called, are actually on display at PJ's pub in Carlingford. So, you know, is this a tourist trap? Absolutely. But again, is it part of the imagination, the cultural fabric? And, you know, I'm not saying that PJ O'Hare was, that he actually witnessed, you know, this, what we see is maybe a streaking leprechaun gone wild. But perhaps PJ O'Hare was also participating in, you know, some sort of cultural tradition. Maybe he had too much to drink, or maybe he had a hallucination.
Yes.
Okay. And this is where this really comes into play, because according to Oliver Sacks in his World Science Festival interview about his new book on hallucinations, he says that hallucinations really are cultural in nature and specific to the individual's background. So he said that seeing miniature people is one type of hallucination, as we said, a subtype. But depending on the person's cultural background, the miniature person could be a leprechaun, a dwarf, a fairy. So that's why I think this is fascinating, because if you have this hallucination, it is colored by your perception, what you have grown up with, the sort of stories, maybe the warfare, maybe the prosthetic arm of a leprechaun got lodged into your brain. Mm-hmm. And this is the sort of thing that might be expressed depending on certain external conditions or neurological conditions that you have. So, of course, if we're going to talk about these Lilliputian hallucinations, and that's what they're called, we should first sort of give a little bit of an intro on hallucinations.
Yeah. It's worth noting that hallucination, as we're discussing here, it's just one way of looking at essentially paranormal experience. As we discussed in our alien abduction episode, people have always seen weird things in the woods, in the skies. It used to be fairies. Then depending on your cultural flavoring, maybe it's angels, or maybe sci-fi flavoring makes you see UFOs. We've always seen things. We've always had these experiences. And there are various ways you can explain them that range from simple imagination of a youngster to neurological disorder. And it's definitely happening for the person who's experiencing them.
Yeah, and when we talk about hallucinations, we're talking about many different sensory modalities, talking about visual, auditory, olfactory, gustatory, tactile, and other. And you can actually, if a person is undergoing a hallucination at the same time that they're going MRI, you can actually try to figure out the type of hallucination they're having by looking at the blood flow to the region of their brain. So, for instance, if you see increased blood flow to the fusiform gyrus, which is where you detect faces, then you know someone is having some sort of visual hallucination having to do with perhaps even a little person. It's kind of funny to me, because when we talk about hallucinations, we really think about them as being apart from us and otherworldly.
Yeah, we tend to think of them, a hallucination is seeing something in the world as it is not. It's seeing the world wrong. But that really implies that there is a correct and definitive way to experience reality.
Yeah, and because I was thinking about this, we really do have a very tenuous line between imagination and reality. And I was thinking about this in the context of our blue sky, right?
Yes.
Because what is the blue sky but an illusion to us? Because if you think about it, the only reason why we're seeing a blue sky is because violet and blue have the shortest wavelengths, and they scatter a lot more than long ones when particles like oxygen and nitrogen molecules are present. So those are the ones that are most apparent to us. So that's what we see when we're looking up in the sky. And then it's not that we just see a purple and a blue sky. No, the mind can't even really sort of deal with that because of the machinery that we have with our perception of color. It kind of has to mix some of that with white until it turns out to this cohesive blue that we look up in the sky at.
Yeah, and as pointed out in the excellent colors episode of Radiolab, it's arguable that too that individuals who do not have a preconceived notion of blue would not really see the sky as blue. Like, there's also that level of cultural layering on
it.
So it really makes you think, to what extent am I experiencing the world around you? I mean, ultimately, our brain, it's inside of some bone. It's inside of some skull. It depends on these sensory mechanisms to experience the world and then translate that into data. So essentially, the brain is blind anyway.
Well, and it's highly sensitive to suggestion. Yeah. We've mentioned this before, but there's a 2011 study at Hull University in the UK, and it asked participants to imagine a color while looking at a gray pattern. And what they found is that those people who were most susceptible to hypnosis, in other words, given to suggestion, they were able to actually hallucinate the colors at will when they were asked to, which was corroborated by an MRI. So again, there's this idea of, you know, what is, you know, we bring this up a lot, like what is reality and how much of it is colored by our perceptions?
Yeah, so much of the, I mean, you can argue that our perception of reality itself is an hallucination. And any alteration of that is just a change in the flavoring. For instance, there's a closed eyes visualization, closed eye hallucinations that occur. When I was a kid, I would do this a lot, where I would close my eyes, I guess just because I was bored, and generally you see colors moving around. It's like an instant fireworks show. Maybe I was just easily amused. I don't know. I was an only child for a bit until my sisters were born, so I had to spend a certain amount of time by myself. But even now, as I've discussed before in yoga, when I'm engaged in Shavasana, the corpse pose meditation at the end of the yoga session, I'm closing my eyes and I'm seeing, and I'll end up seeing colors, and ultimately I'll see forms and figures and faces even. And really that is an example of closed eye hallucination. I'm not doing anything to my body in this instance except working out with yoga for a little bit and then sort of calming myself. But I'm seeing things that are not there within my mind.
That's interesting because when I was little, one of my favorite things to do was to close my eyes and pretend I was on a grid and shrink myself and then expand myself on that grid. And I thought I was a little bit insane. But, you know, I felt my body doing that. And so it's interesting that there's part of our brain that we can really tap into to manipulate our experiences like this. We're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, though, we are going to talk about this specific type of hallucination that deals with the detection of tiny things, tiny people, tiny animals.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated.
AT&T Fiber, live like a Gaginian. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
All right, we're back. And in this episode, we, of course, started off by talking a little bit about fairy folk and leprechauns, paranormal experience, essentially. And we're getting into the discussion of how hallucination, and particular modes of hallucination, make us see tiny people and tiny things.
Yeah, and, you know, before we start talking about this perception or this illusion of tiny people or things, I wanted to point out that it is amazing when you think about it that our eyes and our minds are able to visually reconstruct things. So, for instance, if you have, you know, a plate on the table and a fork next to it and you continue to look back and forth at those items, your brain has to over and over again visually reconstruct those items and also do that, you know, in the context of moving back and forth. So it's got the movement element. And what we're talking about here is perceptual constancy. So what your mind is doing is saying that plate is still a plate and is still the dimension that it is still the scale that it is. And this is a lot of work for your brain to do and your eye to do to take in all of this data and make us feel as though we are on the same constant state where things are the same and have a constancy to them.
Yeah, one of the things that this discussion of hallucination really drives home is that sight and our perception, our the mental processes that make sight possible, are pretty complex.
Mm-hmm.
And the least little bit of something can go wrong or change, and it can have some pretty dramatic effects on how you perceive reality.
Yeah, it's funny because you really do take it for granted how stable the images are around you and how stable the story that your perception is telling you is, all because of these different parts of your brains working in concert. There is something called micropsia or Alice in Wonderland syndrome, and this is when objects actually appear smaller. And it's not necessarily the mechanics of the eyes, but it's really the interpretation of the data that causes the objects in the visual field to appear minuscule. So when you have these Lilliputian hallucinations, they are forming complex visual hallucinations of people, objects, or animals that are greatly reduced in size.
Or sometimes exaggerated.
Yes, sometimes exaggerated.
Which also, you know, ends up going into all sorts of mythological possibilities there as well.
Right. We've got some examples, too, that really sort of dwell on this. And the hallucinations are vivid, and they evoke varied responses, including fear, anxiety, or even pleasure. They've been seen across the board in people who are experiencing delirium tremens from alcohol withdrawal, people who have eyesight problems such as macular degeneration, and people with mental disorders like schizophrenia. Although in schizophrenia, even though hallucinations are more common, this type of hallucination, this Lilliputian, is very rare.
Yeah, and most of the cases that we were looking at with Lilliputian, it's a situation where the person is otherwise mentally fine. Like they're not they're not a disturbed individual or a quote unquote crazy person. It's not like, oh, that crazy person down the street seeing little people. Of course they are. They're crazy. No. It's, for instance, one of the cases that Oliver Sacks talks about in his book Hallucinations, which is excellent. Highly recommend anyone at all interested in this pick that up. It's very readable. Just a great book. In his book, he talks about a patient that he refers to as Zelda, who he treated in 2009. She was an historian. And some of the hallucinations that she ended up seeing included she saw a great-granddaughter. She saw a trio of witches. She saw her hair rising up in the mirror like it was weightless. She saw tiny people crawling out of the TV. She saw gaily dressed figures sort of parading around. She saw six ominous tall men in brown suits around her hospital bed. She saw little men in green caps. And she saw small fairy-like children sort of moving around as well. Just to give you an idea, because a lot of these hallucinations, it's things are larger or smaller than they need to be. So you're encountering giants, you're encountering little people. Oftentimes they're really brilliant to behold. The color scheme will be amazing. So the costuming, if costumes are perceivable, the costumes will be crazy and exotic, right, and bright. So you can really see where the idea of a fairy folk can emerge from this, because, oh, they were little people and they were dressed like they were from another world and their colors were unreal and magical.
Well, and they were mischievous too, right? A lot of times these accounts have, the little people that are running around doing various things that are nefarious or...
Yeah, and they're disappearing or they're reappearing. They're not necessarily obeying the physical laws of our world.
Now, these are called release hallucinations because it's thought that they are released or instigated by the removal of normal visual afferent input into the association cortex. So in the case of Zelda, there was reduced blood flow to the optical and parietal lobes.
Yeah.
And so this caused the hallucinations. But probably one of the things that is most associated with this is something called the Charles Bonnet syndrome.
Yes, or CBS. And this is a common condition among people with compromised vision. So when we're saying compromised vision, of course, we're not saying the person is necessarily completely blind.
Mm-hmm.
They might be suffering from just age-related macular degeneration, cataracts, glaucoma, diabetic eye disease. Their sight may be somewhat limited, but they're still able to visually perceive the world to a certain degree.
Yeah, the idea is that the information received from your eyes actually stops the brain from creating its own pictures. So when you lose your sight or partially lose your sight or it's damaged, your brain is not receiving as much information from your eyes as it's used to, and it begins to fill in those gaps by creating this sort of fantasy pictures or patterns. And then when this occurs, you experience the images stored in your brain as hallucinations.
Yeah, it's kind of this idea that the world that we live in, because we look at like when we're just looking around a room, we're looking at particular little spaces, and then we're moving in another little space. We're kind of basically the world that we're in exists in our minds,
mm-hmm.
and we use our vision to constantly upgrade the details of that mental image that we interact with.
There was one case of a Mrs. C, an 80-year-old woman. She complained of little people dressed in blue and gray leaves hiding in her cupboards. And she also saw tiny black cats from time to time. And her chief complaint was that the little people liked to watch her undress.
Ah.
So, of course, she was examined. They found that her cognitive functions were fine. And that really, again, it came down to impairments in her visual field, again, creating this story from this lack of information that was being processed.
Another interesting aspect about Lilliputians, especially as a related to CBS, Oliver Sacks points out that most CBS hallucinations are ultimately inspiring, pleasant, even mm-hmm. friendly. Not to say they all are. There will be some that are a little disturbing, such as the brown dressed men that are really tall that are around Zelda's hospital bed.
Yeah.
That was ominous in nature. But for the most part, they tend to be lighter and more amusing and magical in an uplifting sense. Whereas there's a lot that goes on with paranormal experience, be it alien abduction that is scenario which is rooted in say sleep paralysis,
mm-hmm.
which is terrifying because your mind body connection is doing something weird and add a little flavoring to it from whatever your worldview or mythology is, and it can be a terrifying situation. But with CBS, you tend to see these more sort of like, huh, there are little people in my closet. That's totally cool, but I would rather them not look at me while I'm naked.
Yeah, there's this idea, too, that perhaps, you know, it has an adaptive function in terms of people who, in general, with hallucinations, not just little people, mm-hmm. that if someone has lost someone, and particularly in the elderly, if they hallucinate, you know, maybe a loved one who's departed, that this is a source of comfort
yes.
to them. So.
And bereavement hallucinations, so yeah. there's a whole area as well. It's this idea that we're, if we're losing our ability to update the mental image in our head, mm-hmm. we're having to update it internally. Like, imagine you're inside your house and you're wanting to paint an image of your backyard. So you look out the back window every day and you paint a little more of this image and you update it a little more. And then one day your windows are walled up or they're frosted over and you can't see out them all that well. Well, then you have to, maybe you're listening. Maybe you're drawing on your memory to try and alter that picture and make it as accurate as possible. But then inevitably you're bringing in errors. You're bringing in, even magical creations into that painting.
That reminds me of Anton syndrome, when you have someone who is trying to replace, I put in quote, their reality with a hallucination to simulate eyesight. Because
this occurs in generally people that are really like totally blind
yes.
or extremely deteriorated.
Totally
eyesight.
Blind from cortical damage, and that damage can be caused by stroke. And this affects the optic lobes. So these people are absolutely unaware of their blindness, and they insist that they can still see.
Yeah, like you'll say, hey, you're blind. Don't try and walk across the living room because there are toys all over the floor. And they'll say, I can totally see. And like they believe they can see. Now they'll end up stepping on the toys because ultimately they can't. They are blind.
Mm-hmm.
But to them, they feel they're experiencing reality. If you tell them, hey, describe that person sitting on the couch over there, they won't blink. They'll just describe the person. The description may be completely wrong, or it may be reasonably correct based on previous knowledge of the individual, you know, whatever. But they won't hesitate because in their mind, they do see.
And see, I find that example so fascinating just because that really does point to this adaptive function, because if you have lost your eyesight and you are lacking that stimuli, then your brain is just making a simulacrum of that, of
yeah.
reality, which I think is just fascinating.
Sachs also shared an account of a patient who, in the 1980s, with a blind patient, went on a drinking binge and saw again while in the midst of this drinking binge.
Mm-hmm.
Like the next morning remembered having seen as if his sight had returned.
But it was a hallucination.
It was an hallucination, yeah.
Yeah.
But, and again, a lot of this really drives home just how complex sight is and how complex our observation of the world is. To what extent is all of our sight an hallucination?
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Yeah, again, this idea that there's this this visual constancy that goes on that we just that's running in the background and we don't even think about how tenuous that is.
So as Oliver Sacks points out, Lilliputian hallucinations can also occur in migraines. Particularly, he points out the migraine blog by Siri Hustvedt on New York Times, which is a blog just about the author's experiences with mm-hmm. migraines. Now, I do you experience migraines?
I do, yeah.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
What are they like for you? Do you ever see anything with them?
Sometimes I've seen lights, and actually a good many of the females in my family have histories of really, like, pretty intense histories with migraines, and they complain of something they call an aura. Mm. It's a feeling, and they also get the strobe light effect.
Interesting. I've never experienced a migraine. My father used to get them, and I think my sister experiences them from time to time as well, but in their more extreme nature, there it's almost like a supernatural experience. Like mm-hmm. it's like something from another world is reaching out and touching your brain, rather painfully, but in a certain way illuminatingly for a few seconds or minutes or what have you.
And again, what we're talking about is a sort of impairment of the visual field
yeah.
here, right?
Yeah, people will see lights, like you said, geometric patterns, flashes of light, zigzags, blind spots, shimmering spots or stars, mm-hmm. auras, and in some cases, tiny men and tiny animals. On the migraine blog, the author was talking about how they were reading a book, lying there, and they looked down, and they saw a small pink man and his pink ox, perhaps 6 or 7 inches high. So the author says they were perfectly made creatures, and except for their color, they looked very real. They didn't speak to me, but they walked around, and I watched them with fascination and a kind of amiable tenderness. They stayed for some minutes and then disappeared. I have often wished they would return, but they never have. It's just amazing to think of that. You know, you just said this migraine hits, and you look
yeah.
down, and there's a little pink farmer and his ox, and they're not really concerned with you, which ties in nicely with when we're talking about fairy experiences and, mm-hmm. and alien experiences, paranormal experiences around the world. They vary so much. Sometimes it is a terrible experience where you're like, oh, I'm being abducted by aliens or I'm tormented by demons. But in other cases, it's a matter of, for a brief second, you have a peek into a magical world just beyond our own.
Well, I think anybody who has ever had a really bad migraine can attest to one of the things that is probably interesting to them as well as me is that when you have an awful one, it feels like the fog is rolling in, and that to some degree it does feel like your vision is being affected, not just with the strobe light effect, but as if something's just kind of moving over your brain like a cloud.
Yes.
So it's interesting to see that sort of deprivation of stimulation or stimuli might manifest itself with a Lilliputian hallucination.
Yeah, in the book, Sacks points out that in a migraine, a wave of, quote, electrical excitation slowly moves across the visual cortex.
Mm.
And on the way, it's possible that it directly stimulates clusters of orientation-sensitive neurons in the visual cortex. And this direct stimulation causes patients to see shimmering light, zigzag fortifications, etc. As we see the wave move through the brain during a migraine, when we're looking at brain scans, it's matching the movement of the shimmering bars in the patient's sight.
Huh. So yeah. that's very interesting. That sense of movement isn't necessarily an illusion.
Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, I'm not envious of people who have to deal with migraines, because, like I say, it's just a normal headache sufferer. I would see my father get these migraines, and I, it was like, wow, how can a headache be that bad that you just, you know, that you're just, you know, gripping your skull. Mm-hmm. Like I've never had a headache that bad. But now that I see a little bit more that what's involved in it, I can totally get it.
Well, there you go. I hope that everybody has a wonderful St. Patrick's Day and that you keep in mind these Lilliputian hallucinations as you go about your day, clad in green, drinking green beer.
And maybe thinking a little more about leprechauns, being respectful of them, knowing not to chase them.
Being respectful,
don't
yes.
try and kidnap them and rob them because they will trick you. And maybe also when you're thinking about Irish culture and Irish mythology, know that there's a lot of rich stuff in there, in addition to the leprechaun, in addition to Lucky Charms and the awful leprechaun horror movies. I mean, you have the Tuatha De Dan and that they're pretty fabulous.
And post, leprechaunism transformations with prosthetics.
Yes.
That exists for futurist,
yes. One day,
leprechauns
one
out there.
One day we can transform into leprechauns. So, if anyone has anything you would like to share, be it on Irish myth and legend, be it on your own history with leprechauns, but more importantly, on your thoughts on the hallucination aspect of this episode, do you deal with migraines? And if you do, what kind of hallucinatory experiences do you encounter? We would love to hear about that. Do you see the grid pattern, the fortification? Have you ever seen little people? Due to migraines, due to CBS, due to any other kind of paranormal experience, we'd love to hear from you. And if because we are curious about how other people perceive the world and about how neurological things can contribute to that. And if we share your material, you know, obviously we're going to do so in a respectful manner. So let us know. In the meantime, let's call the robot over and do some quick listener mail. We recently, of course, did the slime episodes, and mm-hmm. we did the Valentine's Day episode about slugs,
mm-hmm.
which there you go. If you need a monstrous creature to associate with Valentine's Day, to add a little
you're
magic,
right. You're right.
Then the slug is perfect.
In particular, the banana slug, which is a penis-chewing slug.
Yes.
So to speak.
And it is also a mascot.
Yes. At UC Santa Cruz, which we mentioned, and we had a bit of a laugh about. And lo and behold, we heard from a listener who is a PhD candidate at UC Santa Cruz.
So she writes in with this fabulous postcard, for starters, and says, "Hi, I just wanted to say thanks for the shout-out to WCSC in your podcast, Slug Life. It came out the same week I handed in my PhD dissertation on lizard mating behavior, not slugs. And by the way, the title of the paper is Male Aggression Varies with Throat Color in Two Distinct Populations of the Mesquite Lizard." She continues, "It was still a perfect timing, though, because your podcast has helped me through many long hours in the lab. Please enjoy some slug-themed goodies as a token of appreciation, Beth." So, yeah, so she sent a box that contained, first of all, some buttons. Which
yes,
are nice.
Yes.
And these, I don't mind them. One of them says 100% slug, which means that you're 100% behind this team and their slug mascot.
Uh-huh.
And then there's also this other button that that I actually don't mind either, that says that has the university insignia and then has this cartoon slug that's reading the works of Plato. And he has little glasses on.
It's pretty adorable,
and
actually.
He has arms for some reason.
Yeah.
So I can stand that, too, because it's right. All right, he's a slug, sort of, but he's also he's reading Plato. He's even more intelligent than we thought. But then she also sent this. There's another portion of the care box that is kind of horrifying.
Okay, so this is a box of chocolates. What could be horrifying about that?
Well, because they're all shaped like slugs.
They're beautiful. And some of them are banana slugs, too,
yes,
by the way.
Some of them are yellow-coated in something, and others are just more like a dark chocolate. And some seem to have like a white chocolate infusion that gives them kind of that mottled color that is common to slugs.
Yeah, I was going to say that looks like the leopard slug, as we know, is the gymnast of the sexual reproductive world.
Yeah.
This is so cool, Beth. Thank you so much. And congratulations. I'm glad that we could be in your ear holes with you while you were working on your dissertation. And I think that's just awesome.
Indeed. We always love to hear from listeners who all listeners, but also when they have some sort of science in their lives. It's always fun.
And thank you for making Robert squirm with that chocolate. It's pretty priceless.
I do not know if I will ever eat one of these. But we were talking, it would be an interesting experiment to see to what extent people of the office here actually ate them. And if they did, would they only eat the rear portions of the slug?
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, if I had to, I would break off the rear end of the slug and eat that. Because as we discussed in the podcast, all sorts of horrible stuff happens at the front of the slug.
It's
the rear of the slug where you're safe.
Yeah,
ironically.
The front's got the penis, the anus, but we'll definitely need a control box of chocolates to place alongside it to do a fair representation
first.
Of what happens here. But all of this is awesome, so thank you again, Beth.
So if you would like to reach out to us, you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Tumblr. We are Stuff to Blow Your Mind on both of those. On Twitter, we go by the handle Blow the Mind. And if you ever do get a wild hair and you want to send us a letter or something, feel free to send us some snail mail or slug mail, if you will. You can find our address on the HowStuffWorks website. Just do a search for HowStuffWorks.com contact, and you'll find the page that has the mailing address.
And you can always contact us by sending us an email at blowthemind@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.